This is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Laurie Elster, and this is the All Access Star Trek podcast.
Hi, this is Tony with a bit of breaking news that came out after we recorded the podcast. Paramount Pictures has now officially confirmed the origin story Star Trek movie as part of their 2025-2026 slate, which they released as part of their CinemaCon presentation on Thursday. The details confirm what we've already reported, the director and the writer and J.J. Abrams, and that this is set before the 2009 movie. So the big news is that this is the first time they've officially confirmed this. It's the first time a Star Trek movie has been part of their CinemaCon presentation for years. The first time for Brian Robbins, who took over the studio in 2021, that he's presented a Star Trek movie to CinemaCon, which is an industry event. You know, I'm sure Laurie, if she were here, would say something funny and, you know, about, you know, she'll believe it when she sees it. And I think a lot of fans are feeling the same. But it is a milestone that they're serious about getting a Star Trek movie into theaters by the 60th anniversary. Anyway, now back to the originally recorded podcast.
Today we are going to review Star Trek Discovery, Episode 503, Janal. But first, we're going to go through the news and we're going to start. I'm not going to make fun of this or groan about it. We need to start with business news because things are heating up and getting kind of interesting, even to yokel like me.
So last week we talked about how it's now looking more like Skydance. They're now in a exclusive discussion.
But now there are issues galore with that.
Right. Well, but first of all, there has been this open question of what do they do with Paramount Plus? Some early speculation is it's not profitable. They just shut it down. But now it looks like they want to keep it and they want to, quote, supercharge it with technology and, you know, improving the back end.
It needs to be supercharged with technology.
Yeah, which is fine, you know, but also likely forming a joint venture with someone else. Names being thrown around, Amazon Prime, which I don't think makes sense for Amazon at least, but Max and especially Peacock make sense. And so we're back to Mount Cock, basically.
I know. That's so nice.
There was some new market research just coincidentally showing that it would be more competitive. It would make more money. This is in Variety. Yeah, you know, I think a joint venture is in their future, regardless if they sell to Skydance. And I've been saying this for a while. I mean, David Ellison and Sherry Redstone must listen to this podcast, right?
Oh, for sure. They're listening right now as we're recording it.
Indeed. Well, then they really like what we have to talk about next. So last week I said the stock went up and then it was going down. And I said, I'm not going to bore you with why. Now I'm going to bore you with why.
Wait. Can we do bigger picture before we go into stock prices?
Okay.
Okay. Just because I don't want to get in the weeds too quickly. So what I'm understanding is that shareholders and investors are concerned that the deal that Sherry Redstone wants to make is great for her, but not for them. And that this creates a big problem because you have an obligation to your shareholders.
Right. And I've hinted at this before, but I really now actually need to talk about how there are two types of shares for Paramount, A shares and B shares. And Sherry Redstone has the good kind and where you get voting control. And so when the plan is for David Ellison's Skydance to buy out National Amusements, which is Sherry Redstone's company, that gets him these controlling voting shares. And then step two would be for Paramount and Skydance to merge, with Skydance buying regular shares of Paramount, about half the company. But this is what's got investors pissed. Through this process of Skydance injecting about $3 billion into Paramount through the merger, they would issue more equity, which would dilute the stock. So shareholders are concerned. Rightfully so. They're worried that instead of this turning into a big win for them, it won't be. So Sherry's going to walk off with $3 billion. And shareholders and Paramount's going to be in a better position with all this new money and new management and everything. but average shareholders will not see any real gains in the short term, certainly, or even medium term. This is not going over well. I mean, there's
yeah.
Big investors have been voicing, sending letters to the board. If you remember when Cherry had Viacom and CBS re-merge a few years ago, that resulted in a couple of major shareholder lawsuits, which ended up costing hundreds of millions of dollars in settlements. And I'm starting to think that Cherry knows this is going to happen again, and she's just factoring that in. She's right. Like, I don't want this to happen. And, you know.
And it'll cost more.
It'll cost more, but I'm going to get my $3 billion. So the Skydance merger may not be as clean as people might want it. And the other side of this is like, because the Apollo deal was like just a good old fashioned cash offer. Here's, I forget, $26 billion or whatever it was. And that would have been a big win for your average shareholder. So the Paramount board and the committee in charge of looking at this deal needs to justify it to avoid the shareholder lawsuits. And then this week, half the members of that committee quit, apparently are leaving. Now, this could be because they want to avoid conflict of interest because they're friends with Sherry Redstone, but maybe not. So it's too early to tell. So, you know, I guess this is another watch this space things, but I still think a deal is coming. I still think it's good for Paramount. I still think it's good for Paramount Plus and good for Star Trek.
Which is, you know, what we all care about in the end.
Yeah, but it may not be good for your average Paramount shareholder.
Right.
I mean, the stock right now is at the lowest it's been since the pandemic. I think a lot of that is uncertainty. So they're going to need to reassure the market, reassure investors soon that what they're doing isn't going to screw them over.
Although it might be.
Although it very well might. But Sherry's going to work out just fine, I think, is what's happening.
Well, that's what Sherry cares about. And you can't blame her for caring about herself.
But David Ellison does not want to walk in and immediately face a shareholder revolt. I'm sure he doesn't want a deal that is seen as a shareholder screw over.
Right.
So I think that this is more people are reacting to what's in the Wall Street Journal and what's the board and Paramount have never said anything. They've yet to say a single word about this because the companies never do during these processes. So it's quite possible that in the end, it'll just be fine. And and there'll be a nice deal and it'll work out well for shareholders.
What I like is that when I see these stories, I also see people on social saying, I can't wait to hear what Tony has to say about it. I'm looking forward to him explaining it.
But I wish I knew more. You know, I wish I had all the answers here because what I'm saying is I don't know.
Right. But nobody has all the answers. That's why you don't know. Yeah.
So that's where we're on Deal Watch 2024.
Right.
I'm going to get into the little weeds here, but I mean, because one of the bigger issues also with anything that happens is a regulatory issue. And I'm going to get a little political now, but the Biden administration and the FTC are not fans of mergers. And so I think doing a joint venture kind of skirts around that issue because they wouldn't be merging companies. They'd be forming a joint venture and that wouldn't fall under the same level of scrutiny.
It's a little sneaky.
Yes, because like if you tried to combine Warner Brothers Discovery and Paramount Global as two giant entities or Comcast and Paramount Global, I have a feeling that the current administration just wouldn't let that happen. It's a sneaky way to get around that.
Yeah, big business. That's why I stay out of it. It's a creepy place to be.
All right. Let's talk about fun Star Trek stuff.
Like the Roddenberry Archive, which has just expanded. And they have virtual tours of Deep Space Nine, the Bridge of Discovery, a great mini documentary with Armin Shimerman giving a tour through the promenade, new ship models, all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, this is the thing. I mean, they've been working on this for years. It's on the web, but they always say it's temporary, like it was on the web and then they took it off. But it is available on the Apple Vision Pro for all 2 dozen of you who went out and bought one of those.
Have some money for such things.
Hopefully this gets extended to Oculus and other VR things in the future. I think it will be. It's starting to sound like they are work. Eventually, this is going to become a commercial product of some sort. yeah, it's very, very cool stuff. You could even take a tour of the Klingon ship from Star Trek, the motion picture. I mean,
yep.
I mean, there's so much content for all of these virtual tours, although it's always a little weird because the ships are, you know, there's no one on the ships. All the ships are, I mean, it'd be too complicated to put people on and have you interact with people.
But yeah.
It feels
that's
a
different
little,
thing. Yeah.
But it feels weird walking around all these. It's like those episodes when no one's on the ship and it just right. feels creepy.
And it's not supposed to be good.
Yeah. But no, it's amazing technology, and I'm really glad they're keeping at it.
Yeah, I feel like for a long time, we're like, what are they making and what are they doing? And I don't understand what it is. And now we have a much better sense
yeah,
of what
we just
it is
knew
that they're
lots
doing.
Of people, cool people. The Akutas have been involved and,
right.
you know, and they're obviously spending money. Now, there is an actual piece of merchandise that was announced last week that got people talking. And that is the announcement of Star Trek coffee.
Which sounds delightful.
I think they did this in the 90s, but there's a company called Pop Culture Coffee. They have like Ghostbusters coffee and some other stuff. Yeah, so good idea. I think some people are just reacting to some of the choices that they're making in their rollout.
Right. Like, so they started with Captain's Choice Medium Roast with Kirk on it and Vulcan Vanilla with Spock on it. So first I started hearing, where's Janeway? Because she is the person that you most associate with coffee. And they are planning later to do Janeway's Java Jolt, which is coming. But I saw a lot of people, they were like, maybe Kirk is associated with coffee, which to me he is, because there are a lot of open coffee cups on the bridge and things happen to his coffee and he's constantly getting a coffee. Vulcan Vanilla feels weird and off-brand.
Yeah, it's like that. It doesn't even rhyme. It's just there's alliteration with V. But
Vulcans would not be drinking vanilla coffee.
No, nothing. It's way too flavorful. You know.
Yeah.
The people who drink Plomex soup, they'd want a nice light roast. There's going to be a Ractigino. There's going to be a Picard French roast because he's French.
You know? Drinking his Earl Grey tea with his British accent. Yeah. A Borg blend, which is fun. I mean, I do think it's a great, fun idea. And I love coffee and I love Star Trek. So that's a good match. But the thing to start with was Janeway. And if you wanted Kirk, then do Janeway and Kirk. But like, you got to have, you can't roll out a Star Trek coffee brand and not have the person who talks about coffee more than anybody else.
I mean, what you're really buying here is, I mean, it's $18 for a 12-ounce bag, which is more than, you know, good Pete's coffee, right? So,
well, it's about Starbucks price, isn't it?
I think it's a couple of dollars higher, especially because shipping's not free. So you're buying the packaging,
right?
Someone got me a gift of Star Wars coffee once that had Yoda on it. It was like cool packaging.
Was it gross?
Well, the thing is, like, I kept the bag in the kitchen as, you know, just on the shelf there because it was cool looking. I was out of coffee once. And so I'm like, I'm just going to break open that Star Wars coffee. And it was not very good.
Was it whole bean at least?
I can't remember. I think it might have been actually.
Because I only buy beans. Like, I don't buy
yeah,
grounds.
These are all, actually it's unclear, but they're starting with their blends and they're starting with ground.
Oh.
So, you know, we'll see. My bet is it's just kind of average coffee in a Star Trek bag. And if you like the packaging, then you'll want to buy it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to want something just because the packaging sounds nice, but I'm rather fussy about my coffee.
Exactly. People are, it's like, how far is your brand loyalty to Star Trek going to go? Are you?
Well, not enough to get a steady supply, because I've been known to order coffee from places when I have a good cup of coffee and I'm like, oh, do you sell the beans? You can ship them. Great.
Yeah. And admittedly, they've announced a series of releases and the last one, you know, for later this year is the Janeway one.
Yeah, it's just the thing that I see everybody saying. Like when we tweet about the story because it's on the site, that's what people are commenting on. There's, so it's just someone just didn't make the most obvious choice. Although maybe that's an effective strategy to get everybody sharing the story and talking about it.
You know, and it could have been, you know, that they were planning to do it, but they couldn't get the artwork approved in time. And who knows you know, so the world of licensed Star Trek products is complicated.
And strange.
And strange, indeed. Okay, it's time to pivot to Discovery. But before we get to our review, there's a few bits and bobs to get through Discovery-wise, right?
Yep, like Michelle Paradise talking about the progenitors. I thought it was interesting that she said that they'd actually been talking about them since season 4 and it just didn't play out, but that they were trying to figure out a way to work them in because they're fascinated by that episode and always felt like there should have been more.
It sounds like they're saying species 10C could have been the progenitors instead.
And then they realized it didn't work, which I agree with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And she also talked about how they didn't want to wait around to open the mystery box. They wanted to get it out of the way right away in episode 1 because it helped set up the season. And she didn't acknowledge this. I still think they kind of know that it's all part of their pivot to being more fun and just reacting to things that people have said about the show. And they've said they draw out their mysteries too much. So they're like, okay, here you go.
Yeah, I mean, they let people know immediately. It was telegraphing right away, like, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have a mystery and we're going to find out the answer. We're going to find out each thing quickly.
The bigger picture is this idea that the progenitors and this story of meaning matches what they wanted to do thematically with Michael and the characters, which is right. What they're always focused on. So this is Michael's season of finding, and we're seeing that already in the first 3 episodes, her searching for the meaning of life, which we'll talk about more when we get into the episode.
Right. Who isn't searching for the meaning of life?
Yeah.
Well, some people who probably should be.
So the new Star Trek magazine, which is now called Star Trek Explorer, is out, and they have an interview with Sonequa in it. Perhaps the most interesting thing, which we have up on the site, is she just talks about how exhausting it was shooting the code, what they're calling the coda, which was the kind of extra footage they did.
Right. Doug Jones calls it an epilogue.
Looking at this, they shot this in April of last year. So they were really under the wire. Because remember, Strange New Worlds was at the same time gearing up, and probably I think like a week or two after they finished this Discovery coda in Toronto, Strange New Worlds decided to shut down season 3 because of the first of 2 strikes. So they were under the gun to get this done quickly.
Right, right. They were rushing. And she talks about that. She said she talks about being exhausted and delirious and disoriented, but also giddy and sad. So, and then of course she says that everybody cried together, which, I mean, I just think you would, like, people can make fun of that. But the truth is, when it's the last thing you're shooting for your show and you love your coworkers, you're going to cry together.
Of course.
I think that probably happens on sets of TV shows all the time. I mean, she added that they read letters and poems.
That's new.
So I wasn't expecting poetry. But anyway, I mean, I think it's all lovely. Like, it's such a nice group. And so it was a big deal that they rushed into this thing, knocked it out. She also said she confirmed that the final moment was a Michael scene.
Makes sense.
Which makes total sense.
There's also, this isn't a Discovery thing. This is more an Academy thing, I guess. But
they're tied together.
Yeah. So Mary Wiseman, during the publicity tour, we've asked every actor that we've talked to on the red carpet, and you talked to, you know, when you went to the premiere as well, about, do you want to appear in the Academy show? Now, unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to talk to Mary on the red carpet, but
Cinema Blend did.
Yeah. So whenever we talk to anyone about Academy, they're all like, oh, yeah, totally. But Mary had a totally different reaction when asked if she's going to be involved in the Academy show or was interested. Do you want to do the line reading?
Do you want me to do it because I'm a woman and I have a woman's voice?
I guess, yeah.
Also because I love Mary. She said, I mean, I didn't listen to it, so I'm doing it just from reading it. I should probably have listened to it and practiced. But she said, man, don't try to get me. Don't you try to get me. We can be friends or we can be enemies. And then laughed. To me, that says she's one of the stars of the show.
Yeah, she didn't answer the question. And she, you know, the whole phrase, get me, she doesn't want to get in trouble. She's signed an NDA. You know, when we talk to the other actors and they say, I don't know anything about the show, I believe them because it's still being written. But if you're a series regular,
You've been booked.
And Alex said recently they haven't cast the kids yet, but he indicated they had cast at least some of the adult roles, which this would be. And they've made it super clear in the first three episodes that she's not permanently on the Discovery. She's
on loan.
Yeah.
Yep, she's on loan from the Academy. And, you know, we've talked to Doug and different people, and you say, oh, would you like to be? And they go, oh, I would love to. That would be great. Oh, there's so many opportunities. So at last week's Star Trek Discovery premiere, where Wilson and Sonequa were on the black alert carpet, I asked Wilson Cruz about it. So here's the exchange we had.
And then last question, because yeah. I know you got one quickie, Starfleet Academy show.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Would you love to be on it, and do you see a role for yourself?
There? Listen, I'll say this once, and I'll say it again. My phone number is exactly the same. I have the same email. Alex and I are close. I am at his beck and call. I would love to revisit Culver, and if that opportunity arose, we would make that happen.
So he wants the gig, obviously.
Yes,
but
yes.
But it doesn't sound like he knows, just like Doug and everyone else, he's ready to go, waiting for the phone call or the email.
Yeah, he's so ready for it. He was just laughing. I mean, he was giddy that night anyway. He was in a really excellent mood. Lots of fun.
You know, they said it in the Discovery universe. They had choices. So, they're going to
bring she is teaching there. And talks about how important it is and how this is the thing she was meant to do. So,
yeah, she's in it. Of course she's in it.
Yeah.
All right. The last thing, if you watch through the entire season premiere on Paramount Plus, at least in the USA, we're hearing they didn't do this outside the USA, unfortunately, is that there was this season on Star Trek Discovery. And we did our usual, screen cap thing, which is on the site. Won't get into everything, but there's some interesting things in there. It seems more and more clear they're going to visit the mirror universe.
Mm-hmm.
You can see an Enterprise, which we think is the ISS Enterprise, but it's the Strange New World style. And there's another shot in the sickbay set. And you could see Michael and Book fighting two versions simultaneously of Maul and Locke. So two Mauls and two Locks. So it's the mirror universe or something very much like it.
Mm-hmm. And an Enterprise and weird transformations. There's a lot of cool stuff in that preview.
Yeah. Just check out the full thing. You know, was there anything else in there that popped for you?
Well, just like weird transformations, forehead things and weird eyeball thing for Michael Burnham.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely something weird going on with
her. It does look like a fun season.
All right, let's do a review.
All right.
Let's talk about the trip to Trill, Janal.
Discovery episode 503. Should we start with an overview?
Sure.
I mean, I think there was some fun stuff in this. I love the Culber stuff. All of that was fun. I think of the episodes we've seen so far, it's the weakest. But it had good performances from Wilson, from Blue, and from Mary Wiseman, I thought. And Saru had the weakest story.
This is the thing of when the show starts trying to juggle too much. There were four storylines.
Right.
That just never works. One or two storylines goes well. I thought the Trill storyline with Culber's, Janal, Michael, and Book was good. I loved the Tilly and Rayner stuff on the ship. But the Saru storyline was kind of pointless. And then the Adira Gray one was more like, we've got to get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Let's just go through the motions of making it clear it's over, right. So these characters can each move on in their own way. But there's still enough going on to enjoy, but sometimes with episodes like this, I find myself paying more attention to like stupid stuff in the background, like, oh, the bar has a name now.
Right. Or like, look at those aliens in the room with Saru.
Because there's the ones from The Lonely Among Us, and there's lots of little stuff like that in this episode, actually. I think we've talked about this before, that season five, I think they're embracing canon more. This episode had a lot of Trill lore, both going back to stuff from DS9.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole premise is based on that one episode of DS9 where Jadzia shared her different hosts.
It's called Facets.
Great episode.
Yes. With Odo turning into Curzon. That was super cool.
But then we got some new, like, little bits, you know, they're willing to add little bits of canon. Like, I'm pretty sure we never knew this before, but the spots are like fingerprints.
Yeah.
And we visited a new part of Trill, and we got to meet a monster. So, you know, I liked it. I didn't love it. I think they could have done a better episode with trying to get the Saru story more integrated into either the season plot or something interesting. I mean, maybe they're going somewhere with this. You know, there's a tiny bit of world building. The Breen got the mentioned Breen. Again.
There's got to be something happening with the Breen because the factions are getting worse, they keep telling us. So there's got to be something there. But no, the Saru storyline, like, it also had low stakes. Like,
it had, you know, no stakes.
What are we going to do about our engagement announcement? I don't know. I don't care. Like, I'm excited they're getting married. I don't care about engagement announcements and whatever the political whatever. And I don't know. It wasn't a great choice. I understand what they were trying to do with the character, which was they're trying to show that he is A, learning how to be in a relationship because he's never had one. And then he's learning what to do with his protective instinct. It just wasn't enough to hold my interest that much.
Every time they switched to this story, I just was like, really? You know, I just couldn't believe they were doing this. Some shows are good at carrying on multiple interesting storylines in multiple locations, like famously Game of Thrones, you know, would do this. I am now pre-worried. We're going to get a lot of like, oh, let's cut to Saru and Tarina at HQ and get...
Right. Decorating their quarters. Yeah.
Right. Arguing over the font of the what color napkins should we have at the reception? I mean, it just back at HQ is where we should be getting that should be Star Trek West Wing stuff.
Well, the stuff that was going on in that room that they just sort of glossed over could have been the interesting part of the story. You need a star base and we have resources and I'm trying to figure out. And that if that had been an actual difficult problem to solve. And that was their focus instead of the engagement announcement, that could have helped.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That being said, I thought both Tara Rosling and Doug Jones did their best with the material they were given.
Yeah, totally. And there were a couple of good lines in there, too. There were moments.
Sure.
And I just love his crazy quarters with the misty greenery.
I don't see how things are going to work. I mean, Tarina's from a, you know, Vulcan is famously hot and dry. I guess it's his office. The question is, what is their house going to be like? You know,
I know. I was wondering, like, how are they going to sleep in the same room?
I don't know. It's going to be tough. They have some challenges ahead. I mean, I like it. She's like, look, people get into fights. You know, it happens. Very logical.
Yeah.
But the action, the literal action is happening on Trill. Wilson Cruz really just knocks it out of the park. And I like how they, I mean, well, I guess Michael and Book really did have to do a lot of action. So they're not putting them in the background.
No.
But, you know, Wilson got to really step up and play this other character, really.
Yeah, he got to do something he hasn't gotten to do before on the show. And I thought he did a fantastic job, as I told him at the Discovery premiere the other night. Last week, almost a whole week ago, because I loved the way that I thought his physicality was so completely different. Everything he did was great. So I talked to him about it. Why don't we check out what he told me?
I mean, when I tell you the anxiety involved in creating this character, Janal was a mountain I had to climb. And, you know, they thank God they sent it to me a little early. I had a couple of weeks to figure it out. And you know what's really great is they were like, you could do whatever you want. Not great. Because as an actor, you need some boundaries. You need some parameters to work within. And they were like, we trust you. Don't do that. So then I kept coming up with ideas because, you know, my imagination goes wild. I'm going to try all these millions of things and not be able to settle on anything. But thank God that I got to do that episode with Sonequa Martin-Green and David Ajala, who, you know, I love all of our actors. But, you know, to have them to bounce ideas off of. David even lent me his acting coach to, like, prepare some stuff just to, you know, figure it all out. It was really important for me to get it right because it really set up the rest of the season for me. And I really wanted Janal to stay with Culber throughout the season and you'll see why towards the end. But you know that in some way he affected him even after it was all over. But it was so much fun. I cannot begin to tell you to be that person who had been locked up right outside of the physical world for 400 years, I think it was that they said. I can't remember now completely. I think maybe more, 800? I can't remember. Don't quote me on that, mija. But you know, what he's allowed to be in the physical world again, that there was such awe and reverence and play in him, right? Like, yes, he had a mission, but also like, oh my God, I'm in a body. I can feel myself. I can jump on things. I can enjoy the physical world again. And there's a bit of childlike energy in that I played with. But, and you know, he's a little bit of a menace too, which I enjoyed. It was so much fun.
So that's quite intriguing what he said, especially about how it's going to affect him. Because we saw this at the end of the episode when they're at the bar, him and Michael having the drink, and you could tell he doesn't know how to process what just happened. And he brought up his grandmother again. The grandmother, they keep on mentioning the grandmother. I feel like she's going to show up at some point. Something I was thinking about is they're mentioning God and religion a lot this season for obvious reasons, because they're kind of in search of this godlike power. Remember how season two was going to be all about religion versus science, basically?
But then it wasn't.
They never really paid that off. I feel like they're trying to squeeze that in. Obviously, this episode was about connection. Like, they literally used the word connection.
They said it many, many, many times and talked about how important it is. But it was the theme, and it's kind of the theme of the whole show, too.
Yeah. But I feel like they're heading somewhere with this whole, you know, meaning of life, religion, spirituality thing as well. This is the season where they're going to tell us the meaning of life.
Because Michael keeps talking about she needs to find her purpose.
Yeah.
Or her meaning or something like that. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm very interested to see how this continues to affect Culber, whether or not his grandmother shows up, who died like 1,000 years ago, but whatever. I like that this show allows people to continue to be affected by those things. And you would be affected by that. I mean, I love that Deep Space Nine episode, but everybody's kind of Odo's affected a little, but everyone else just kind of goes back to normal.
I mean, there's a bittersweet thing about it because at the end, they didn't say it, but if you're listening and looking closely, the old woman Trill died. Like, this was her.
Yeah, she wanted to. She was waiting.
And so the symbiote went back into the pool at the end there.
That looked cool, by the way. I loved watching the symbiote zip away through the pool.
Didn't look too much like a sperm to you?
Just looked like a symbiote. I know what a symbiote looks like.
Actually, I thought Ian Alexander did a good job with that little monologue at the end, which kind of became a voiceover wrapping everything up.
I know.
Because they would go back and forth to each character to really emphasize those points of connection and all that. Because we've had issues with Ian before of just being not a good actor. Actually, in this episode, they were fine.
Yep.
And actually, Blue DeBario did a good job.
I thought a great job. Like, really playing that awkwardness, that stumbliness of not knowing what you're supposed to say. And then the relief when someone says something and then you can show how you feel, but you're still scared. Like, I think there's a complexity there that I enjoyed very much. But I just think it was too much. Like, there was too much of those. Those scenes were not the ones, especially because we have this other stuff that's going on that's so interesting. And so every time you cut away, you're like, oh.
Exactly. I mean, the only useful part of that is that, and again, this is almost a blink and you miss it moment, is as they're going through that ritual at the end, where everyone has to embrace. I mean, it's obvious that Maul is there, and they did build that up well. Like, if you notice through the episode, every once in a while, someone will give you an update on what's happening with Maul and Locke. Like, oh, their ship has just arrived in here, and you know, so they're kind of so they know they're coming, and then there she was, and she put something on Adira.
Yes, she did.
Disappeared into their uniform. So there's something sneaky happening. You know, getting back to Wilson, I still feel like he put in the best performance, the episode, because his voice was different. His gait was different.
Yes. You know,
just everything about him was different.
He decided who this person was and played that person. It was so impressive.
It's such a great Star Trek trope.
I feel like almost everybody's had somebody else inhabit their body for one purpose or another.
Being possessed by someone is, you know, Shatner, and everyone's had a chance either to be possessed by or play a, because Wilson never got to play the evil version of Culber.
Right.
From the mirror episodes. They made a uniform for him and everything.
Yeah, it was red. A red medical uniform is kind of terrifying.
Easy to, you know,
yeah,
hide the blood, I guess.
Exactly.
So this was his first time. So good for him. Did you see the twist coming?
Oh, with the creature?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that that was going to, I knew there was something that they were supposed to be nice to it. And they weren't.
And it was a test. He was testing them.
Right. I mean, I liked, there were a few things in that. There were things I liked and things I didn't. I thought it was nice. Like, there was a nice directing choice, which was the first time we find out that the creature exists, they just do it with a high camera angle.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a nice touch. And then the action was fun, but I was, again, that this is a Discovery technology problem. Like, they're beaming. You know, Book is beaming and beaming and beaming. And then when they need to beam out, they go, oh, the rocks.
The bane of all Star Trek, rocks.
The rocks. But we could beam. We can't just
like
go a few feet
away from
away.
The rock. Yeah.
Right. So part was challenging, but I did like all the action. I thought that part was fun. And their whole, like, on the count of three, is that on three? Is that, you know, all that stuff was cute. And it's fun to, and obviously they were enjoying the adventure together.
I kind of liked how earlier on they go, well, we could just beam to wherever you hid the thing. And I thought he was going to throw in some technobabble of why they couldn't. And he's like, nah, I just want to go for a walk.
Yeah. Well, he said, I don't know the coordinates.
Right. There was some good humor in, I mean, obviously the joke with you work out, right?
Right. Which I asked him, I was like, did that come from you? He said, I would never write that. I said, well, they've been looking at your Instagram feed. So, but he's getting asked about it a lot. And I think he seemed to surprised and pleased that it landed so well.
Most of the humor, again, came from, so let's switch storylines to the Rainer Tilly storyline. There was a lot of good humor in that coming from Mary and from various members of the crew who got to have fun little moments. You know, obviously the moment with, we knew it was going to be funny seeing him and Tig Notaro together.
I know, but we got ripped off because it was like she got one line out and then boom, done.
It was simple, still satisfying. I enjoyed it. There's two, did you notice we got two new crew members?
I did notice. I mean, I'm wondering what's up because they have this thing where like, oh, you'll meet Detmer and Oo later. Oh, okay. And they're not on the bridge. Like, you'll meet them soon. I'm like, what's going on that they're not there, but they're mentioned?
It was probably like a logistics thing. So now there's a Lieutenant Gallo and a Lieutenant Commander Asha replacing them for a week. So who knows? And the Onsalus kind of giant head alien person didn't get a line because I guess they can't figure out how
I don't think they
talks. But got a name.
Yes.
They're finally filling in those little details.
Here was part of the weird thing with that whole scene. Like, I totally get that they wanted Tilly and Rainer together, and they wanted to set that up. And I think Michael, if you want to look from an in-story perspective, like, Michael would know, I'm going to put Tilly with this guy because she's the opposite of him, and this is what he needs to know. But I almost wanted a scene where Michael told Tilly that or something, because Tilly's on loan as a science advisor and she's spending all day doing HR as Rainer's assistant.
Yeah, I mean, this is the fast and loose Discovery where they use characters as needed, whether it makes sense or not.
But they could have made it make sense because Michael even could have not explained it. She could have said, Tilly, I have an assignment for you, and told her what it was, and Tilly would have said, well, that's weird and I don't want, and she would be like, trust me, do it. And that would have covered it. But the whole time I was like, why is Tilly spending the whole day like paging people and fetching people. Then, you know, I loved what happened because of it.
Yeah.
But I wish there had been a better reason. But they were really good together. Like, they were fun together. And what I like about his character is that, you know, I see a lot of people online and they're comparing him to Todd Stashwick's character on Picard. And I think there's a huge difference because Rayner, you know, he's gruff, he's abrupt, but he does listen. He is taking in information. Yeah. And you could see he's paying attention to what Tilly's saying, even when he's arguing with her, which is what I do when I argue with people. I'm listening. I just keep arguing.
And he did show that he heard what everyone had to say and was able to infer important things about them. But her point was they need to trust you and they don't because you're being a dick.
Right.
You know, lessons learned. I think on both sides, I mean, Tilly's obviously insubordinate. That's kind of the frustrating thing some people have with the shows. With all the new Star Trek shows, people like Ortega and stuff, it's like, you know, you shouldn't act like that. It's the military and all that. But in this case, I liked like when she goes, you didn't give me permission to speak freely, but I'm going to do it anyway, because she's this new confident Tilly and she's willing to speak truth to power. I think it worked, especially he's just been demoted, you know, so how much power does he have?
Right. Which she tells him.
Right. With her 20 words.
Yes.
And the Linus, always a good Linus, talking about he's so proud that he created 3 clutches of eggs.
Yes, 3 clutches.
Great. I mean, that's a lot of clutches.
That's a lot of clutches. He was really proud. I know the details and that's like all that stuff was fun. They tried to make that as fun as possible, and it was, and still did what it needed to do, which was show him that he has to, like, that he wasn't connecting with people and he wasn't showing them that he was being disrespectful.
Yeah, I mean, Rayner's obviously on, I mean, and here's another word they used a lot in this and previous episode, a journey. Everyone here is on a journey.
Right, sure.
We can see where things are going. I am worried that Rayner's going to not make it this season. I mean, it's kind of like Todd Stashwick, where no one thought he'd make it. Well, no one thought he'd make it past the second episode. So he did,
and everyone was convinced he was going to live, and then boom.
Yeah. Is Rayner going to make it the whole season? My bet is no. He's going to sacrifice himself because he grows to love these people so much.
He discovered the value of connection.
I still like the character, love the actor. I feel like this episode would have worked just fine with an A and a B story. And, That could have held it together.
And the Adair Gray thing could have been much quicker.
We did get a little plot stuff. It was all kind of data dumped all at once, wrapped into the the Janal story. Now we kind of know what's going on. Because it is kind of weird, this, you have to look for clues, and like, why would anyone do that? And it's basically a test.
Yeah.
Just like he did with the monster. It's all a test because they don't trust people with this power.
We also importantly heard Stamets talking about the benefits of it, because there's a point at which I started to think, like, they should make sure nobody finds this.
A big question is, will they hand the power of the gods to the crew of the Star Trek Discovery, where they could decide who gets to live and die and they could create their own races? I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it's...
Their technology is magical enough in the 32nd century. I think one of these characters, it's going to be like...
V'ger.
Yeah, someone's going to get the power, but they're going to like go off and become a god, and maybe they'll help once in a while, but Starfleet is not going to get the god technology, nor the Breen.
Nobody should get that technology.
When Stamets came in, super excited that he worked out what was on the pad. And there was something clever here, like Reno talking about the half-life of relationships had him figure out the half-life of things with, you know, sure. He was basically describing a giant version of the Genesis device. Like, everything that he was saying was
right,
the same kind of thing. And I could almost hear Kruj through Rayner saying, everything you just said is dangerous. Whereas he's the Carol Marcus, oh, isn't this great? You know, not seeing the danger of it all.
Right. And because he's I mean, I hope this is going to be his story because he needs something to do. So it'll be interesting if he gets particularly obsessed with it. He certainly is focused on it to the point that he didn't notice what was going on with Adira at all.
Yes.
He's like, say hi to Gray or whatever. Like that's.
So is he the one that joins with the technology? Is he the Will Decker?
Oh, God. Let's hope not.
But then what happens to Culbert? Do they have to break
right.
up because he becomes a god? It's kind of hard when your boyfriend's a god.
Yeah, just ask Carolyn Palamas. with a giant green hand and everything.
But we could see these big issues for the season without, you know, there wasn't a lot of plot. I mean, there was very little Maul and Locke that get talked about.
Well, we know Maul was locked up by the Emerald Chain, right? And that she joined the Courier Guild at 17. Like, that was some new information that I think was important to know and sort of world building in a way. The thing with Locke that we haven't talked about was from the first episode when he takes off his helmet and there's something.
Right. His face does
his
a weird
like
thing.
His face like adjusts or something.
I remember when I first saw that, I thought, oh, that must be something about the helmet. And I kind of dismissed it.
Same.
But one of the writers, Carlos Cisco, someone noted that. Jorg noted that. And he said, like, pay attention to that. Like, that's
yes.
a thing. Or something like that. So it's a thing. Whatever it is, we know that there's something about Locke.
There's a reason we don't know what his species is.
Now, because his face did the weird thing, is he a changeling?
No.
I don't think it's that easy.
Yeah, I mean, we just had changelings in Picard, so I hope that it's not.
But there is something going on with Locke, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're not dragging out the mysteries. They are giving us bits of information. We know more about Velik and, you know, his group. There's a group of six scientists now, one of whom was Janal. So there's four others. I have a feeling, and then one of them died, but I have a feeling we may learn more about those four. But Janal said,
I think so too.
He wasn't going to tell, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not going to tell you. Cause I guess, again, getting back to, you're on this journey to deem if you're worthy. So Michael, her arc this season is to prove her worthiness to discover the godlike power.
Maybe she's the one who's going to merge with V'ger.
Could be. I mean, that would be very Discovery that she. But the thing is, they weren't planning on the season ending the series ending. If they
right.
knew this for the last season, yes, she would have ascended into heaven at the end
and seen the great koala.
But they didn't know that. So if someone does, you know, become a god, it would have been someone else. But she will have to prove herself worthy to even get them in the room where someone has to make that decision. Now she's going back to her Vulcan meditation. We saw.
Right.
So.
Because Culber remembers everything.
Yeah.
I did have a few like little tiny bits along the way that I think are worth mentioning, because
sure.
this episode's kind of easy to pick apart, but there were some really fun things in there. Like I liked Culber saying, emotionally overwhelming is what I do best. It's like, no kidding. You were dead. You came back to life. You had a lot going on. I loved Book describing himself as an unaffiliated professional associate.
And Janal had a lot of fun with that.
Yes, he did. I thought Janal running away was funny anyway. Like, there's a creature. I'm just going to go. After telling them to draw their phasers. Evil, but funny.
When it was Reno's time to talk about the theme of the episode, and she said, everyone is on a journey. We come together. We come apart. And then she said, wow, I just sounded like a woo-woo asshole.
Yeah.
I almost felt like they wrote her the first line, and then Tig Notaro was like, you know, that was just
felt like.
Yeah, that was like, wait, you know, that's ridiculous.
I like that whole scene with her and Stamets where she's like, dude, they're breaking up.
Yeah, pay attention.
Yeah.
Did you spot the slug of cola? When Tilly goes to the bar, she gets a slug of cola. And then Rayner says, that looks radioactive, which it does.
Oh.
We've seen the bartender before, but I think this is the first time the bartender ever had a line.
Right.
And he said, welcome to Reds. I think it was Reds.
And had to pour something, which I just recall Armin Shimerman on the Delta Flyer saying that it was so hard for him to pour drinks because he couldn't see.
You know, maybe it's easier to see with the new.
I know. I felt like that pouring was like set up so that it would be all right. It was almost like the bottle right in the glass. So just to make it easier, because it was, I happened to notice that because I was thinking about it. I also liked, separate from the bar scene, Book using his powers again.
Yeah.
It's been a while since his forehead glowed.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like they remembered Saru has superpowers. Although he tried early on and like the space monster just said, you know, it was just angry.
Yeah. Did you pick up anything? Yeah. It's really pissed off. So.
But he was able to communicate with it at the end. And you know, it was just a mom and a dad protecting their kids or their to-be kids. So kind of a sweet moment there.
Yeah. No, that was all very Star Trek. And I think overall the way that they're using canon is great right now. They're in a really good phase of it, of taking bits that work and adapting them to the fact that they're in the future, but still rooting it in the stuff that we know.
They're not overindulging, but they're not ignoring it. It's a good,
yeah, I think
a good balance.
And speaking of balance, I think this season so far, they're beautifully balancing the serialization with the episodic.
Yeah, this episode definitely stood on its own, but yet it fits into what we could kind of see. I mean, they went to Trill for the new clue. They got the new clue. They got another piece of the map, so now they've got two. So, you know, presumably there was a bit of name dropping at the end. Michael mentions Zenkethi, which is a race we've never seen, but they have to go to Zenkethi's space for the next clue.
Right, after they get through the red tape.
The big question is, are we going to see Zenkethi? Because in the comic books, they are space dinosaurs, like ferocious space dinosaurs. I mean, maybe the clue is just in their space. My bet is we'll never see them. Right. But it would be kind of cool if we did, because that would be their first canon appearance. So this structure is working. This clue,
yes.
You know, look for a clue, find a clue, move on to the next clue.
But then they planted this thing at the very end that reminds us, like, oh, we're going to pick up right where we left off when Maul plants the thing on Adira.
Z was like, don't worry, Trill security, we got it covered. Obviously not.
Yeah, well, it's just a bunch of guardians. I was also thinking, like, why would you want to be a guardian? It doesn't look that fun.
Trill society, I mean, this gets if you look at everything, the rituals and stuff, they kind of worship the symbionts in a way. It's very ritualistic. It's very
right
monk-like with their existence. So
exactly what I'm saying. Not fun.
It's a good point, though, of the symbiont survived, the Jix symbiont, which would be like 900 years old at this point. The question is, wasn't the Jix symbiont ready to let go?
I think it was too. I think it wanted.
But it survived because you could see it wriggle away.
It swam away, but maybe it was going to a special, Trill death place.
Could be. The old lady, definitely, that was it for her.
Yeah. She was tired, man.
Yeah.
She'd had it.
I don't think I've got anything else. Season is still working for me. Even if we had issues with this episode, the pivot has worked. It's more fun. It's better balanced, better action.
Totally agree. All right. So that's it for Star Trek Discovery. Why don't we do our bits of the week? Tony, what's yours?
Mine is something that is from a couple weeks ago when the Ghostbusters movie, The Frozen Empire, was doing their publicity tour. Ernie Hudson was talking to IO9 and somehow got onto the subject that he auditioned for the role of Sisko in Deep Space Nine. He even said, and I'm not sure I believe this, he said later one of the producers said they wish they hired him, which seems like, I don't know.
Who knows who said it and exactly what they said. And it just, that seems kind of odd. But didn't he also say something about how he was supposed to do it sexier?
Right. So they did a callback with him and they said they wanted it sexier, and he tried a thing, and it apparently it didn't work. And that's why he didn't get the job. So there you go. A little, you know, almost, I mean, just add to the list. I mean, Peter Capaldi auditioned for Cisco. Interesting list of people auditioned for Cisco.
I have to say, they ended up with the best one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I love Ernie Hudson. I think he's great. But, like, Avery Brooks just brought something magnificent to that role.
Yeah, no notes. what's your bit of the week?
Mine is an episode. There's a podcast called Trek Untold, which I was unfamiliar with, hosted by a guy named Matthew Kaplowitz. I don't know how to say his name. I apologize, Matthew. Anyway, there was an episode called The Life and Legacy of Leonard Nimoy, and it was with my pal Bonnie Moss, who I know actually through social and stuff, but she's reached out to me a bunch. We talk a lot. She had a friendship with Leonard Nimoy, and this whole the conversation they have is all about, well, first of all, how she got to know Leonard over the years and all the encounters she had with him, which I find fascinating. And also the early days of fandom. Like, this was before the internet. So if you were making like a fanzine, it sounds like you'd do your pages and then you'd send the whole thing to the next person. And then they'd do their pages and send it to the next person. Like, it's just a wonderful discussion of what things used to be like, how she forged her friendship with him. And a lot of it is, and I know this about her, she's a very thoughtful gift giver. She has given me some very lovely and unique Star Trek gifts. And she used to collect stuff, and she would call the paper and go, can I have the proofs of those photos? Like, she, it's really just a different era. So I thought it was a fascinating episode. She's a lovely person. The stories were great. She was involved in early fandom, which is fascinating. And then I also listened to, he just had another episode with Clint Howard, which was fantastic. So, and he's had a lot of people from, you know, writers and actors from all eras of Star Trek. So it's a good podcast, but I especially recommend the episode with Bonnie.
And she's a great follow on social. She's got so many great photos with Leonard and all that.
And he photographed her. That's one of the stories she tells. If you are a fan of his, it's well worth listening to. And she's a delightful person.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it. We'll be back next week with a review of episode 4 and just a little preview. I think we both love it.
Yeah, I really loved it.
See you then.
See you then.